Right, guys, this is kind of like how it's going to go down now, okay? I'm just going to sort of like, just going to talk a bit. We got kids playing. The kids are welcome to be playing. They can make as much noise as they want. You guys can chip in. You can contribute as much as you want because this is a family time, not a kind of die on a Sunday ranting time, okay? I was thinking about the cross, you know, and it's the most painted, the most sculpted, the most commonly reproduced symbol on the face of the earth. There's been more art, there's been more jewellery, there's been more tattoos of the cross and everything in between than anything else, any other thing in the whole world. And I reckon if I said, no, is anybody wearing a cross right now? I'd be amazed if somebody wasn't. Is anybody here wearing a cross? Unbelievable. Okay, all right. For the purposes of the tape, I'm shamefully wrong. But like, but I mean, normally, I reckon if some people were here, they would have. But they're obviously not here. But I mean, you know, certainly, you know, it's something which we wear around our necks. It's something which we're really familiar with. We see it in graveyards. We see it on you know, on churches. We see it, you know, on the Red Cross, and it's just everywhere. And so many paintings of Jesus on the cross from different cultures and different times, different generations. It's quite incredible. And it's all been after the fact of Jesus dying on the cross, right? I mean, you couldn't paint a picture of Christ on the cross until you'd seen Christ dying on the cross. But the thing which gets me is that there is a portrait of Christ on the cross that was painted for us 700 odd years before Christ even came. And that's in Isaiah chapter, well, most of the Old Testament, to be honest with you, but in Isaiah 52 and 53 especially, Isaiah the prophet, he saw what, you know, is kind of, a lot of Bibles have a little header that says the suffering servant. He saw what the Messiah was going to have to go through. And I find it just really incredible that when I read this, it could almost have been written after Jesus had gone through all that for us. It could almost have been written after, you know, after the nails had been driven through his hands, after all that had unfolded. But this was written 700 years before Christ was even born. And all I'm going to do, I'm just going to read a bunch of stuff, and I'm just going to sort of share a few thoughts as I go through. I'm just going to read the passage through. That's all I'm going to do. At different points, I'm going to pick something out and say, isn't that cool? Have a think about that. If anything I say strikes you, please just feel free just to chip in and say, yeah, do you know what? That's amazing. Just please feel free to do that this morning. Because I want this to be a time where we encourage each other around God's word. So it's Isaiah 52 verse 13 goes through to Isaiah 53. And it starts like this. It says, behold, my servant shall act wisely. It says behold, which means look. What I want to do this morning is just look at the cross. So often we don't like to look at the cross. Some people don't look at the cross because of the barbarity of it. It's not a nice place to come to look at because of just what it represents. Mel Gibson's film, The Passion of the Christ, was flocked to by many and steered clear from by many as well. I've seen it. Michelle hasn't, because Michelle knows that, like, the goriness of it. You know, it's just something she didn't want to sort of like see. Is that right, Shell? Oh, do you know what? Why haven't you seen it? You're going to watch it.
And then God spoke to me from a verse where he says to Thomas,
Bless those who haven't seen and yet believe.
And I just thought it was right for me, yeah, just to experience it, yeah, spiritually, not visually.
Yeah, okay, cool. But some people just didn't want to watch it because it's an 18 certificate film. They didn't want to see that kind of suffering. Some people don't like looking at the cross because of what it... They just don't like to be confronted by this thing, this event, which has split time in half, which you either believe it or you don't. It says something about you. It says something about eternity. And Isaiah says, 700 years before Jesus even come, he says, behold my servant. And he says this, he says, he shall be high and lifted up and shall be exalted. Jesus said, when I'm lifted up, I'll draw people to myself. He was saying, and you can see that in two ways. Jesus was high and lifted up on the cross, and he will be high and lifted up in praise and worship as the eternal, you know, unending King of glory as well. And then this is what it says. This is just incredible. When you think about who Jesus is, the Son of God, the glorious, beautiful, Holy One, it says this, as many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred beyond human semblance and his form beyond that of the children of mankind. It says he was beaten so badly that you couldn't even recognize him as a human being anymore. What Christ was going to go through on the cross was going to be horrific. And we don't like thinking about the stuff like that. We don't like thinking about somebody being tortured to that point where and treated to the point where they didn't even look human anymore. And yet it says that Jesus was, his appearance was so marred beyond human semblance, you couldn't even see his humanity and his form beyond that of the children of mankind. And Mel Gibson's film does capture the physical stuff that Jesus went through. What it couldn't capture, because you can't capture it on film, you can't convey it through words, is what he went through spiritually. But physically, what Christ went through would have been horrible. It wouldn't have been the kind of the nice Jesus in a white little towel hanging on the side of a Catholic church, kind of, you know, not a lot of sweat or blood, just his hair's in the right place. It's just he's got, you know, he happens to be on a cross. It wasn't like that. It was horrific what Jesus went through. And I don't know about you guys, but sometimes you just think, why the cross? Like, if Jesus had to die for the sins of mankind, why did he have to do it that way? Why couldn't he just, like, get a bullet in, you know, in a side street somewhere? He still would have died. His blood still would have been shed. So why did he have to go through it like that, you know, for all the world to see, shamed, naked, marred beyond human semblance, which is such a, like, posh way of saying he was pretty much, you know, in a bad way. Why was he lifted up in that way? Why is that how the cross went? And I believe it was God saying, you human beings need a permanent reminder of what your sin does to me. You need to see the cross and be horrified by it, because that's what it feels like to be sinned against. It's not a little thing for God when we sin. It's not a little thing when we mess up. It's actually a major thing. It's like, actually, it hurts God when we sin. And the cross is God saying, this is what the sin of the world has done to me. This is how your sin makes me feel. And this morning, guys, just take a bit of time to behold that, to look at that in your mind's eye, and to remember that he was lifted up like that because of your sin and mine. He was lifted up like that to show us how serious what's going on in this world is, and the things that we've done is. But then it says this, so shall he sprinkle many nations. Remember we saw the sprinkling thing on Sunday? God's gracious sprinkling to cleanse us from sin. So shall he sprinkle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths because of him. I love that. For that which has not been told them, they see, and that which they have not heard, they understand. Who has believed what they heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. Listen to this, that's alright, don't be Margaret, that's fine. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him. There's nothing with Jesus, either before the cross or after the cross, that made everyone say, that's the King of Glory. That's God. There's nothing, like, you know, he should have come down just proper fit, shouldn't he? He should have come down as just some stud. Just some sort of everyone going, whoa, he must be God, because he's the best looking bloke that's ever walked the planet. He's the strongest looking man that's ever walked the planet. But it says here, he had no form of majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. In heaven, it's the complete opposite. Where he is now reigning in heaven, he is the beautiful one. He is the one that everyone just looks at and just gasps at the beauty of his holiness. But when he came to die on that cross, the glory of Christ wasn't in what he looked like. The glory of Christ is in what he came to do. The glory of the cross is in the fact that he came to save sinful people, not in the superficial, but in the spiritual. It says, he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted or familiar with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. How in the world can God become acquainted with grief? How can the perfect God step down into this world and not only witness grief, but be familiar with it? That just blows me away, that on the cross, Jesus was learning obedience. Jesus was understanding humanity from the point of suffering, and he was acquainted with grief. Hope that encourages you this morning, that we got a Jesus who is familiar with grief. He's acquainted with grief. And verse 4 then in chapter 53, it goes on to say, surely he has borne, let's check this out. It says in verse 3, he was a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. In verse 4, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. All of a sudden, what he was doing on the cross becomes clear, because now we enter the picture. Until this point, it's just saying, this is what happened, this is who he was, this is how he suffered, look at the cross. And now in verse 4, he says, surely he's borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. I don't know if you guys have or are carried or carrying sorrow and grief, if you know what it is to be going through difficulty and pain and hardship. I know some of you are. Jesus on the cross was carrying that for you. what I love is that, like, when I go and pick Ellen up for group, often, like, I'll drop her off at group, and then if Michelle's got the car or we just need to get Ellen tired so she'll go to sleep, Michelle says, can you, like, walk her back rather than driving her back and go and visit the horses up the, you know, just up from the Colburn farm. So we go and visit the horses and we walk up there, and she gets really tired and she says, Daddy, can you carry my rucksack? It's too heavy. And then she says, can you carry me, because I'm too heavy. But for the purpose of the illustration, we'll focus on the rucksack. She says, my rucksack's too heavy, can you carry it for me? And do you know what? Of course I want to carry it for her, because I know what it's like to be little, I know what it's like to be tired, and I don't want her to be tired. I don't want her to have to carry it on her own. And in a very small, simplistic way, guys, Jesus died on a cross for our grief so he can carry it for us, so that we haven't got to go through the rough path that we tread in this world carrying this stuff on our own. He says, cast your cares on me. Lay your burdens on me. Let me carry it for you. It's your griefs, it's your sorrows that I'm dying for. And I hope that encourages you guys. As a Christian, you have never got to suffer on your own, ever again. He will carry it with you. He will carry it for you. Surely he's borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. We looked at the cross and we said, oh, poor bloke. Bless him. He never deserved that, did he? What did he do that to Jesus for? Jesus was one of the goodies. What? God must have, like, he must have done something wrong. God must have, like, been really upset by something Jesus did, because he's, like, you know, he's on the cross now. And it says here that we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. We thought, well, he's just gone the same way as the world, because we didn't understand in our own understanding before God opened our eyes. We just didn't get the cross. It looked like Jesus had lost. It looked like the battle had been lost, like victory had been snatched away, that Jesus had failed. But then it carries on. This is what was going on. But, one of them brilliant buts in the Bible, he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement, the punishment that brought us peace. And with his stripes we are healed. What looked like the greatest loss, the greatest failure, the greatest tragedy, was actually the greatest victory, the greatest moment of just celebration, the greatest event ever. Like, some people don't think that Jesus died in our place. They don't like the idea of the big word, ready for this? Penal substitutionary atonement. It means that God paid the price in our place as our substitute. And yet, listen to it again. He was wounded for our transgressions, the things we've done wrong, the sins we've committed, the mistakes we've made. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. You know, the iniquities, it's like that stuff in your soul that you just can't get rid of, the memory, the guilt. He was crushed in our place for that. On the cross, he was taking our place. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us what? Peace. Oh my days, how much do we need that? Guys, we cannot have peace with God without the cross. There is no peace in this world without the cross. There is no peace apart from the peace that God can give. And the peace that God gives is a peace that passes understanding. Like I've said before, I can't explain to you the peace that passes understanding, because it passes understanding. That's the point. It's like joy inexpressible. I can't express it to you because it's inexpressible. Well, the peace that we get from God is a peace that passes understanding, but it's only available to us because he took the punishment for the guilt that was robbing us of that peace and the sin that was robbing us of that peace. But when we come to him, he takes the punishment. See, peace, the lack of peace has to do with fear, and it has to do with guilt and shame, and it has to do with impending judgment. You know, how can I look at God? How can I come into God's presence? What could God, you know, what would I say to God? He knows my life. But he took the punishment so we can look at him and know peace. It says in Colossians that he made peace through the blood of his cross. That's what he did. Have you got that peace this morning, guys? It goes on. It says, and we, as all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And we are sheep. Sheep are stupid. Sheep make mistakes. Sheep go off on stupid paths. They fall off cliffs like lemmings. You know what I mean? Me and Michelle went on honeymoon to North Wales. Went to visit a beautiful waterfall. Like, apparently this is the biggest waterfall in England and Wales. Pisillan Rhaeadr. Got to the waterfall, and a sheep had gone kamikaze over the top of the waterfall. It was just floating dead in the bottom of the waterfall. It was like, well, that's a lovely photograph. Because that's what sheep do. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. every one of us has turned to his own way. We can all relate to this. None of us were born with a inbuilt kind of like homing beacon to do everything God wanted us to do. We all went off like a nutter. But the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. The Lamb of God died for the lost sheep to take away our sin, to pay the price. Just think about that, guys. That's what he done for you. He was wounded for your transgressions, crushed for your iniquities, punished to give you peace. And it says here, by his stripes we're healed. I believe there's healing. I believe that I believe in physical healing. I've been healed myself physically. I believe that, you know, as a church, we will pray for the sick. I don't believe that everyone is guaranteed healing just because they come to Jesus. God is allowed to say no. But I also believe in emotional healing. I believe in spiritual healing. I believe that basically this is saying God can fix you. God can fix you. Through the blood of the cross, through his stripes, we can be healed. Again, do we need that healing? I'll fly through these last bits, guys, and we'll take communion. There's one more thing I want to really bring out and just nail. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like a sheep that is before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. When Jesus died on the cross, he didn't kick off. He didn't, like, you know, say anything. He didn't say, this isn't fair. He took it like the man, the son of man that he is. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people? And they made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich man in his death. Isn't that mad that they wrote that 7 years before he was given the rich man's tomb after he died? That's incredible, isn't it? He made his grave with the rich man in his death. Although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth, Jesus was the innocent, perfect, spotless Lamb of God. He'd never done nothing wrong. He wasn't dying for his sins. He was dying for ours. Why did God allow this to happen, guys? This next bit makes it clear. Yet, it was the will of the Lord to crush him. I can't even get this. God wanted that Jesus to go through that. The Father willfully said, you have to go through that. Because it's the only way that we can be forgiven. The only way we can be made right with God. It was the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief. When his soul makes an offering for sin, listen to this, he shall see his offspring. He shall prolong his days. That's like a prophecy to the resurrection. Although he was going to die, God was going to prolong his days so he could see those who were going to be born again. The will of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. And I'm just going to close with this final thought, but before I do, I want you to think this, guys, okay? But imagine everything you've ever felt guilty for, okay? And like we all through our life, we have different things at different stages that we have to bring before God and ask for forgiveness for. Imagine all that stuff put into one little box, and then you have to carry the weight of that guilt, and just your own guilt, not anything anyone else has done, just your stuff from your life, from birth to this day, crammed into one moment, crammed into one sensation, and put on your shoulders for you to carry. How heavy would that be? Could any of you carry that? And that's just you. Jesus bore the sins of the world. Every man, every woman that's ever lived, that ever will live, Christ carried that sin, that guilt, and that shame on his perfect, pure shoulders. That's why Mel Gibson's film could never adequately convey the agony of Calvary, because actually the agony of the cross was what a holy, righteous God would have gone through. Not only understanding that guilt, but becoming that guilt. The Bible says he didn't become a sinner. It says he became sin. So the things that you feel guilty about, have you ever lied? He became a liar. Have you ever cheated? He became a cheater. Have you committed adultery? He became an adulterer. Have you murdered? I hope not. But he became a murderer. Have you been a pervert? Have you been angry? Have you been aggressive? Have you been lustful? Have you been... whatever it is, Jesus became that for everyone. That's why the cross looked so horrific, because that's what was going on the inside. With that in mind, let me share this with you. Verse 11. Every time I read this, it blows me away, right? Out of the anguish of his soul, he shall see and be satisfied. As he carried all that stuff, as he carried all that pain, all that agony, all that sin, What in the world could Jesus see that would make him satisfied? How could he spare a moment to look outside of what he was going through, to open his eyes through the blood and through the pain and the anguish, and look into the future and be satisfied about? Check this out. By his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous. As Jesus hung on the cross, he saw you. And he saw everything that you've done. And he saw you forgiven for it. He saw you clean in the presence of God. He saw the Father smiling at you. He saw the Father declaring you holy and just and acceptable and righteous. He saw you belonging in heaven. He saw you walking through the kingdom of his Father with your head held high in robes that you could never have earned yourself. And that's why he went through the cross. It was because he could see beyond the pain, and he could see the joy in his Father's eyes as you and me stand in that place, stand in the presence of God, forgiven people, no longer having to carry that shame and that guilt, because we couldn't even be in that presence if we did. And he says, by his knowledge shall the righteous one, Jesus, my servant, make many to be accounted righteous. Guys, you a Christian, then you are righteous. If you've put your faith in Jesus Christ, your sin is not counted against you because of what that God-man did on that cross in your place. He shall bear their iniquities. You haven't got to. Just think about that for a minute, guys. So much of our struggles as Christians is because we don't see ourselves as righteous. We see ourselves in the here and now. Thanks be to God that Jesus Christ saw us as a there and then, clothed in righteousness, fit to stand in the presence of God. His blood has washed us clean. His blood has cleansed our conscience. His blood has purified us. Guys, I know what I've done in my life. I know everything that I've done in my life all too well. And when God looks at me, he sees me as righteous. How in the world can he do that? Because of this cross. Because of this God. Because of this amazing grace. Because of the love which he's lavished on me. Guys, we are so loved. That's why every week, every single week, we preach the cross in Hill City Church. Even if I'm preaching on tithing, I'll find a way of fitting the cross in there. Because without this, we're unrighteous. Without this, we're unforgiven. Without this, we are condemned. Without this, we are not fit to be in his presence. But by his stripes, we are healed. By his grace, we are saved. By his blood, we are clean. And that's what we need to know. More than anything. Therefore, I will divide him a portion with the many, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, or with the numerous. Jesus won a salvation, and he's dishing it out. That's what that means. It sounds quite posh, doesn't it? Therefore, I will divide with him a portion with the many, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong. Jesus plundered hell. He snatched many, many from the flames of hell. And he's just sharing the spoil of his salvation. You know, when you sort of like got a load of stuff, you got so many sweets after Christmas, you just want to dish them out because you've got too much for yourself. He's got so much salvation, he just don't know what to do with it. Well, he does, actually. He wants to give it to you. He's dishing it out. He's sharing the spoil, dividing it with the strong. Why? Because he poured out his soul to death. And he was numbered with the transgressors. And he bore the sin of many so that we don't have to. I pray that the cross never becomes boring to us, guys. I pray that our salvation and the forgiveness that we can know and what it cost is never lost on us. Today, if you've got a day off work or just whatever, just spend a bit of time just thanking him for that. Even if you are in work, whatever you're doing today, just enjoy grace. That was 700 years before Jesus had even hung on that cross. And 2,000 years later, the power of that salvation is still being felt. And I'm really grateful for that. I've got no right to be his child, and he loves me as his child. Guys, do you know that? If you do, let's take communion together.